for taking a ride on the Freedom Fame Podcast series. I'm your host, Joseph Ward, and as always, ride with me is the good homie, Mr. Patrick Irving. Hey, remember, the Freedom Train is brought to you by PACS, Inc. That's PACTSINC. And PACS, Inc. is a black development organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through education and economics with the choice of hard work, honesty, and integrity. For more information, make sure you visit their website at www.pactsinc.org. That way, you can peruse their homepage and look over all them stats and everything, and check out the Amazon Smile too. You can register with PACS through Amazon Smile, and every time you buy something, some of that money will go to support PACS Inc. So next time, all you Amazoners out there, all you Amazonians, when you buying from Amazon, remember, sign up with PACS Inc. on Amazon Smile. So some of that gonna go to PACS Inc. and you be supporting an organization that's like fighting for black people. Fist in the air, fist in the air. All right. And remember, check out the codes of conduct. Check out how you can become a member, how you can donate, how you can get involved, the learning center, and the store. Where you can further support. Once again, that website is www.pactsinc.org. And while you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. Matter of fact, you can download our Freedom Train Network app from our website. Now, it's for Android people, but we're working on the Apple version. That's coming. So just know that, okay? But you can get the app. Are you Android people? You can get the app, and that way, get the podcast come directly to the app, and then got people searching it right there in the app. Also on the website, you can learn about all our podcasters that's on our website, how you can support them, how you can listen to the podcast, how you can tell other people to listen to the podcast, how they can tell other people to listen to the podcast, and just all that fly pimp stuff really going down in the South. So www.freedomtrainradio.com. Ain't that right, Pat?
Word. Hey, Joe. Tell them about so Joe on his quest to become the greatest interviewer in the history of interviewers, the goal of interviewing.
Yeah, I am. I actually am, though. I ain't gonna lie, though. I be sitting back thinking, I was like, though, I wanna see how far I can take this interview shit, though. I really do, though. I really do.
I wasn't even joking. Like, I was being serious. Like, I know.
I appreciate that.
The one-on-one interviews you do, and you know what? That's kind of why I be like, yo. I think if we talk about it behind the scenes, like, for some of these interviews, like, I don't mind stepping back because, like, that's kind of become, like, what you do. Like, shit was dope. So the interview that was dropped on Saturday, what was that like?
So for all you who may not have known, we did our best to promote it as far as possible, but we had a special interview that dropped this past Saturday. That date was the 6th. It dropped on the 6th. It's available now at www.freedomtrainradio.com. Freedom Train podcast series on all your major podcast outlets. Wherever you listen to your podcast, remember Freedom Train podcast series. So I interviewed a young man named Kyra Hawkins. So this all started, young lady Cece, I went to high school with. No, she was a tenement home girl.
Yeah, we know so, Cece.
Right. So she tagged me in the post, young man Kyra Hawkins. We actually went to FAMU together, and Kyra actually friends with my homeboy Eddie Bennett because they were in the strike together in that first season of America's Best Dance Crew.
So he was one of the striker all-stars.
Right. So, you know, we were actually at FAM together, but Kyra had an unfortunate situation where He and his family were victims of mistaken identity with the police, and the police harassed him. So he lives in Sassoon City, California, and when the police officers came to his house, they were looking for somebody. I forgot the name, but they was looking for somebody. They came to his house, and the officer was rude to him and disrespectful. So as soon as the officer got there, he asked him what's his wife, because he lives with his wife and his two daughters. The officer was like, hey, is that your girlfriend or your baby mama? And then when Kyra, the responding officer, was told him, hey, eat a dick. And then after that, Kyra started recording. Then the officer became extremely apologetic. And then at that point, Kyra just let his ass have it because you don't come up. First of all, so you, it's mistaken identity. You didn't do your research to find out who you're supposed to be going after. And then you come up being disrespectful. Then you, like, verbally abusing people. And, you know, he stood up for himself. It could have went left or right, but he stood up for himself. But he wanted to get his story out about his unfortunate interaction at his house in front of his family with the police. But they also wanted to get the message out about just making sure that we're rallying around all black people who are victims of police violence or police harassment.
That's what's up. That was up. That was up. And so I wanted to give you an opportunity. I know we usually get into our banner, our back and forth at this point, but like you dropped, we dropped a special episode, special interview on Saturday. Definitely, if you are one of those people that don't check out the network until Wednesday when this particular podcast dropped, and you're listening to this right now and you haven't gone to check to see what's dropped in the interim or whatever the case, you might have overlooked it, definitely go back and check out that interview that dropped on Saturday.
Right, right, right. And another thing that can help you catch, help you, you won't miss an episode if you download that app.
Right.
Especially if you got your Android. Now, if you don't have an Android, go to your favorite podcast outlet. Wherever you listen to podcasts, make sure you subscribe to the Freedom Train podcast series that way. Because I know I'm subscribed to the podcast, our podcast, other podcasts through Google Play and some other ones. And every time a podcast drops, I get a notification. So make sure you got the notifications on. And also make sure you download these episodes. Download these episodes. We need to download these episodes, listen to them, and share these episodes. Because we're doing our best to make sure that we give people good interviews, good information, good entertainment, a good time, and just make sure you can learn something at the same time and feel good about your blackness. Spirit.
Word.
So it's a, this show kind of, it's gonna be a bit free flowing, but it ain't, cause I know what I want to talk about. So it's all surrounding what's going on right now in these times in America and around the world. So if you've been living under a rock, give you a quick recap. Since the death of specifically George Floyd, there have been protests all around the world protesting George Floyd's death, protesting police violence, all those things. Just injustices are being protested all around the world. We're seeing a significant number of non-black people who are organizing and or participating in these protests. So Pat and I were talking the other day, and like we agreed, you know, even the both of us have specifically said, hey, black people usually show up in mass for other groups of people. We need other groups of people to show up in mass for black people. And damn it, they did it this time. Yep. Damn sure did it this time. So that's happening all around the world. We see different people who are en masse protesting, you know, Black Lives Matter, George, chanting George Floyd's name, chanting Breonna Taylor's name. And like we said in the last show, we got to support these protests. We do. But today, we want to talk about what the crux of the conversation is going to be about strategy and tactics to continue this energy, to continue to support the protest, to build upon the protest, to be able to merge what's going on, the work that's been going on in the community and the protest, to be able to merge those two. Because I believe, and you know, Pat and I, we've talked about it, but we believe that we can continue this energy and we can create some real change. We can't create some real change if we look at what's going on and get strategic about it, get tactical about it, become more organized. So last show, we talked about what's going on. So we're gonna do our best to ask the question of how do we organize this? How do we build upon this? How do we move forward upon this? So that's gonna be the the crux of the conversation. But before we get to that, I just some things I want to throw at Pat just to get his reaction and his thoughts upon. So first, Pat, how do you feel about the Black Lives Matter Boulevard in Washington D.C. that leads to the White House, like the street being renamed Black Lives Matter Plaza, and then Black Lives Matter being painted in the streets? Did you see that, and how you feel about that?
I haven't seen it, but I heard about it. The moral victories are nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, in the spirit of trying to be supportive, I definitely think the moral victories are nice. And it's always nice to be acknowledged. It's always nice to be recognized. But I do think it's one of those things where it's got to be more to it than this. So if this is a way for somebody to galvanize energy, a way for even for those other people we've been saying don't get involved when we're going through things, if they're doing this as a way of waking other people up in their communities and really trying to paint the picture, if you will, pun intended, of what's going on in all of these other communities and force some hard conversations, then it's a great thing. For what it is, it's really a great thing. A lot of times, those of us that know a lot about what's going on, we study it, we read about it daily, we talk about it daily. You know, when we see stuff like this, there's a tendency to minimize it and a tendency not to think about all of the other people that don't know what's going on, that aren't having these conversations, and most of those people do exist in other communities. So from that standpoint, it's a positive thing, it's a good thing to have happen. It creates conversation. But something else has to be done. Like, this can't be it. Like, if this is the extent of what these people are willing to do and what's going to happen, then the movement would be a failure at that point. A total, uncompromising, unquestionable failure.
I'm not going to lie. I like it on the simple fact that it makes racist white people mad. I ain't even going to front. Because you know I like stuff that make racist white people mad. Like, even if I'm not saying this is something that's going to help propel us forward. But if you ask me, do I like it? Yes. And why I like it? Because it makes racist white people mad. Yep, I said it. Just that simple on that. Now, I do feel, you know, I do agree that it is a moral victory, and it is a moral victory right now that, that's not a bad thing because it's a morale booster.
Right.
It is a morale booster. It's a psychological thing because, all right, so is the mayor of D.C. black?
You know what? I'm not sure.
I'm finna Google it right now.
Yeah, actually, it looks.
Maybe a browser.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Bowser.
Oh, black. Bowser. Okay. Yeah, okay. So. Yeah, it's a moral boost. I mean, you got a black mayor who, on the road leading up to the White House, had Black Lives Matter painted into the streets and the boulevard being, or the name of the street being changed to Black Lives Matter Plaza or whatever. So, like you say, damn great conversation. Whether that conversation is going to be constructive or good or bad or not, we don't know, but damn great conversation. If that's the start to structural change, we hope so. Like, we're very optimistic that structural change can happen. We do believe that structural change can happen. We are not here for and don't have time for pump faking, for empty gestures, though. I will say that. If you're full of shit, if you're not really here for the fight for the long haul, and we're going to get more into that when we get to the second half of this conversation, but if you're really not in here for the long haul, then you're full of shit, right? I mean, am I tripping? But
no, I don't think you are, and I chose my words very carefully with regards to how I feel about this, because again, you know, like I'm trying to be very, very positive about what's happening. I agree with you. We don't have time for pump faking. We don't. If you are full of shit, if you're not all in, then you need to go. You need to get all the way out. And we do want something different to happen this go around. But at the same time, you know, people got to understand that this is a moral victory. A moral victory is great for boosting morale, but it's not great for doing anything else.
Right.
So if this is all that, if this is as far as people are willing to go, is to rename the street and to temporarily paint it, then that would be bullshit.
And it should be real. It was done to antagonize Trump as well. So.
Well, and that's the element. Yeah, we do have to talk about that. A lot of this stuff is not necessarily about black people and black lives or racism or police brutality or anything like that. A lot of this is just an opportunity to give Trump some business.
Yeah.
To antagonize him, to make him uncomfortable.
So, I talked about it on The Fix. I talked about how different organizations, corporations, and things are now starting to speak out, and I am questioning a lot of it. I do believe, I said it earlier in the conversation, I do believe a lot of this corporate speaking out is about corporations maintaining their revenue, maintaining the customer base, people continuing to patronize these places and not demonize these places, and being on the right side of history, but playing both sides of the line. Because, like I said earlier in our early conversation, white supremacy is a sophisticated, well-oiled machine that has been adapting and changing over centuries. And so white supremacy sees what's going on. The systematic, all the people that's in the systematic stuff, they understand what's going on and will do whatever they need to do to survive. And if it's faking, like I'm down with Black Lives Matter, then that's a way I can survive. So I feel like a lot of it is fake, because shit, you could have did this 3 years ago, you could have did this 2 years ago, could have did this last year, you could have did this when police ran up in Tatiana Jefferson's house, you could have did this when a white girl ran up in Bottom Jean's house, you know, you could have did this when Ahmaud Arbery. Like, it's a lot of instances where shit could have happened. And of course, you know, we asked the question, well, what's different about George Floyd after actually sparked everything off? But that's why I think a lot of these corporations are bullshit, because you don't have to wait for the nation for it to get, because it's trendy now to say Black Lives Matter for everybody. It's a trend now. It's not necessarily, I don't feel like it's necessarily genuine from everybody, especially if you ain't been there for us, you ain't been rocking with us, you ain't been fighting with us, you ain't been speaking up. You just, yours ain't been there, and all of a sudden, out of the blue, you like, Black Lives Matter. Nah, bitch, I feel like you're trying to keep your money. I feel like you're trying to keep your customer base going rather than you actually caring about Black Lives. So, like I said on The Fix, what actions are you coming with that's going to be specifically fighting white supremacy, fighting black plight, like, I feel like we need to see that more so than words. So, like, that's how I feel about it. That's how I expressed it on The Fix. So, what about you, Pat? Like, how you feel about that? How you feel about these corporations coming out with their Black Lives Matter support and statement?
Well, I think most of it is just, it's a political stunt, like you said in a call that we were having earlier. Or a meeting we were having earlier, it's a political stunt. Like, I agree with that. And on that, you know, I don't feel any need to pull any punches when it comes to these corporations. A lot of these companies are just trying to avoid backlash. The backlash that will come from not saying anything. And they understand how easy it is to just say something and not do
right.
Nothing and still be able to say we support it, or we, because nobody's going to hold your feet to the fire. So even to that,
right.
all of these companies that have been emailing, that have been, you know, because I've been getting a bunch of emails, a bunch of text messages, even YouTube for a period of time had a link up that led to this whole section of cultivated content designed to try to explain racism and what's happening. And go ahead.
And not to cut you off, but that's bullshit from YouTube, because people who've been black creators who've been creating content to speak out against white supremacy and uplift black people have been getting censored because they've been speaking out about it. YouTube full of shit.
Yeah, and then that's another example. One of the things that I've been trying to do, though, is with all of these emails, because I'm a part of a number of different groups that are all trying to do things in the black community specifically, every time I get an email from a company saying that they support black lives, I send a response email saying I represent or I work with a black organization, and we want to know what you're willing to do to help support us in our mission. And so far, I haven't gotten any email back. So, and I am keeping a list of all the companies I email. I do want to give them some time to actually respond, because I started doing this. It's been about 7 days ago now. So if they don't respond, then I'm going to have my list handy and I'm going to publish my list. Not that I think it's going to make any difference, but it's what I can do in my own way to try to hold these companies accountable and let people know that, hey, like, just because this company put out a statement doesn't mean that they actually did anything. And I've been telling people to send me a list of all of the companies that they're seeing that are putting out statements and doing any things of that nature. And, you know, so that I can do the same thing to those companies. You don't even have to track down information. Just send me the name of the company and the statement they made, and I will find the contact information and do all that myself. And that goes into the spirit of, you know, this podcast being about what we can do. That's something that we can do definitely as far as dealing with these corporations. But, yeah, I agree. I think the bulk of them are full of shit. I think the bulk of them are just protecting their image and their reputations. I don't think that they really care. And I don't think that they're going to start caring. Like, there really is nothing different about this situation than an Eric Garner situation where he was choked out on camera. You know,
yeah.
So, and there wasn't any, like, nobody did anything then, and everybody was saying the same thing then. Like, Black Lives Matter, a number of companies put out statements. But what did they do? So, you know, I'll rock
statement.
With you on that.
For that statement, that's it. So, also in addition to that, and I don't want to tell, and I'm going to be delicate with this because I don't want to tell anybody how to protest. But the protests that are turning to parties and people dancing and things, I don't think that's a bad thing. I don't think it's a bad thing. I saw a dunk contest at one protest. I don't think it's a bad thing, but I don't want energy to dissipate or focus to be lost in the midst of that, because those are ways, because when I was thinking about it, and I'm being careful with my words, because when I was thinking about it earlier, when I first saw these different things, I was kind of thinking, like, should this be happening? But then I just, as I asked myself that question more, I thought about different ways African people, period, throughout the diaspora have protested. And song and dance have been used in protest. So I kind of had to check myself on a historical basis to not look at it sideways and say, well, they shouldn't be doing this. Because I am hearing people say that they shouldn't be doing this, but, you know, more I thought about it, I was like, well, song and dance are used and have been used as forms of protest by black people. But the main thing is, as long as the focus isn't lost as far as why we are here, then I think everything is all good. So that's my thought on that. Like, 'cause when I see it a lot, and I have to kind of think about it and kind of check myself. So, like, where are you on that? you totally disagree, you agree, how you feel about the singing, the dance, and the concerts and things, and the dunk contest at the protest?
So I'm a fan of it as long as everything is kept in perspective. If you are a basketball organization or something of that nature, and the way that you want to show your support is to organize a slam dunk contest in order to raise funds and distribute those funds to organizations that do work in the community, I'm cool with that. Even if you are not a basketball organization, but you understand that people are too tight, they're too tense, emotions are running too high, and you're worried about things spilling over, and you organize something that kind of takes the edge off slightly, but still retains the focus, I'm cool with that. But what I'm not cool with is people trying to make protests fun. Like, I'm not cool with that. I'm not cool with people trying to make protests entertaining. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not. That's not cool. I'm not cool with anything that distracts from what we're here for, or that takes energy away from what we're here for. And I understand the nature of the beast. Sometimes you do have to do things to take the edge off. I'm not even being necessarily critical of that. I understand that psychology is real, and you're dealing with people in a very vulnerable state when they're protesting, and there's a lot going on mentally. So if you have to take the step to do certain things that other people would feel are distracting from the movement in order to keep progress, I'm cool with that. So, but I definitely am 100% against anybody trying to make protests, you know, like fun and exciting, or like entertainment, where instead of you going to the club, you go to the protest, because that's where all the hoes at. And the girls are out there looking to be picked up, and the dudes are out there looking to pick somebody up. I'm against you going to the protest because you feel, or you turning the protest into a big-ass family reunion where instead of y'all figuring, you know, discussing the issue at hand, y'all are spending all of your time catching up and hanging out, and it's the new hangout spot. It's the new social networking event. I'm against everything that takes away from what we're supposed to be out here for.
I got you. That's why I was saying, you know, make the emphasis on, you know, staying focused on the mission at hand. To stay focused on the mission at hand. Don't get lost in the entertainment factor. Because, you know, protests are supposed to be something that put pressure on motherfuckers. Right? And so that's why I want to kind of get into organization. So this is a conversation we've had in the past. So, Pat, so let's talk strategy. Let's talk organization. Let's talk things before, during, and after protest. Right? Because black people in America, we need this shit. Why? Because these police killings happen way too often, more often than they need to. Hell, more often than that. So let's do before, during, and after. All right, so before something happens, let's say we're at a point to where we know we have injustices in the community, but nothing has sparked off a protest. But the community wants to get organized, or the community wants to have some semblance of control of itself. From your opinion, from a community development perspective, what are some things that communities can be doing before the protest, or before something pops off and sparks to a protest?
Well, I think, and I'll start with the most uncomfortable thing I think communities need to be doing, which is planning for when something's going to pop off. I think that's when we get to the point of understanding that's how you become proactive. You have to have a plan for what's going to happen before it happens. And to every way possible, you have to figure out a way to dictate what is going to happen. Now, we know that that's not 100% certainty, and that's a different conversation as to how you set up a plan and set up things, execute things in such a way that you can begin to have dictative power over the occurrences. But I do think one of the very first things that has to happen is there needs to be some sort of plan in place for everything that could happen that will result in a large-scale response. And that actually, that list is not as long as most people would think it is, because not everything rises to such a level that it would require a nationwide or a community-wide response. You know, so you're talking about major events. You're talking about external forces coming into the community and doing harm in the community. Things of that nature, which are largely things that you can readily identify if you understand the system that you're dealing with, you got to make a plan for what you're going to do when those things happen. And from there, you can either backtrack and go, okay, how do we facilitate, if we don't have the power to do what we feel is necessary, how do we create that power? How do we grow that power? What sort of things do we need to facilitate? What sort of facilities do we need to develop that power? But on the other end, every community, black, white, brown, yellow, green, alien, whatever, every community needs to be on the path of being self-sufficient. Every community right. needs to be able to feed itself, needs to be able to protect itself, provide itself with resources, and give itself an adequate voice that represents the community, right? That's the political piece. So before anything pops off, a community needs to be going about, in my opinion, a community needs to be going about the business of being self-reliant and self-sufficient. And the further you get along that path before something pops off, the better able you are to manage whatever happens when it happens, and the better you are able to dictate what happens and to control outcomes and to facilitate the things you need when something happens. So we're talking about figuring out where the food is coming from and being able to manage that. And that's a real simple one, but it's when it, you know, it's the simple shit that we often overlook. You know, being able to dictate where the healthcare services are coming from, and being able to make sure that everybody in your community has adequate access to healthcare services, to include mental health services. Because at a time like this one, we're definitely, if you're paying attention, you understand the need for mental health services at this point, because everybody is stressed out right now. These people that are out there in their movements, we had a conversation with somebody in another meeting earlier today that was talking about the energy that was present at the movement. You need mental health workers to be able to allow people to unpack that energy when they go home,
yeah.
to be able to process that energy adequately. So we need the health services sector put together. We need the school, the food, agricultural sectors put together. We need to be educating kids and adults on how to think critically, how to maneuver in certain places. Businesses need to be put in a place where they're protected from people coming into the community and doing them harm. And if harm is done to them, that they have a recourse to repair themselves from within the community. That's a whole conversation about what can be like a long conversation and an individualized conversation based on the community that can be had about what your community can be doing before something pops off. But those things also need to continue to be done even after it pops off.
Well, yeah. See, well, to me, straight up community development. Every community need to have a development plan, and is either building the plan or executing the plan.
Right.
Because I do feel like we said last show, you know, every community on the individual level needs to be on the same page. And so how do we minimize these conflicts with the police? Well, we got to keep the police out of our community, because the police right now, they're policing communities with high crime rates and high these other rates, high disparity rates. So we will have to, as a community, reduce our own disparities. So that means like us, you know, really cleaning up our act, everybody within the community, cleaning up our acts, our individual acts, and cleaning up our community. And then assessing ourselves and coming up and using the data from the assessment to come up with actual tangible plans to develop our own community and rebuild and build up our own communities if need be, or restructure the communities if need be. Because if the people in the community work together, a lot of things can be changed. But that's not happening right now. So that's why I'm asking a question like this and kind of putting it out for both of us is we are vulnerable to police violence. We're vulnerable to violence from white supremacists. I'm not going to say every black community in America has the same level of vulnerability. I can't say that because I know there are some communities who are better developed than others, are more developed than others, and there may be some, I just don't know them all firsthand, but there may be some who are totally developed and maybe working self-sufficiently. I will put that possibility out there. Maybe there are, and if there are, shit, please somebody let me know. Right, but being vulnerable allows all the external forces, like you were saying, allow all the external forces to be able to harm you. So that has to be minimized with community development. And PAX Inc. has a community development plan, one that we've implemented before. Everybody who was working the plan didn't finish working the plan with us. Something that's being re-implemented within the communities that we're working in, because that's something that we know it works, because we looked at all the components in this evidence-based as well. It's not just something that we just pulled out of our butts. It's something that is things that have been tried and true in other communities. So that's before. So during the protest, what are things, strategies, ideas, outcomes, whatever that could be done during the protest?
I think during the protest is where you get into this space of figuring out who's going to do what, because all of a sudden you need people out there that are going to be on the front lines. But you still need the people who are doing the work of community building to continue community building. They got to continue building the community. If they stop, the community will fall apart, and the protest, the movement itself, will become the downfall of the community. But at that point, the people who aren't doing community building, or even people who are doing community building but might, be able to be transitioned to be more effective and doing the protest work, they should go out and engage in protest. They should go out and re-engage in matters of resistance. Now, for me, a march is most powerful in raising awareness. So when it comes to black inequality in America, everybody's aware. They're not going to agree with it. But even the ones that don't agree with it, they are aware that it happens. At that point, they need to be exposed to certain statistics or certain life circumstances. But at the end of the day, a conversation is not necessarily going to change their minds, and neither is a march. But a march does do something else. It unites the people that participate in it through a shared experience. All of the people that participate in a march together, especially a significant march, share an emotional bond that's created through this experience that can be utilized to build a level of unity and energy that lasts long after the protest itself is dissipated. So in that, revolutions can pick up steam from these momentary occurrences of movements. That's why I say I'm not necessarily against a march or a protest or anything like that, but the larger goal has to always go back to community development. So we're protesting to let you know that this is unacceptable. What just happened will not be silently tolerated. But in addition to what's talking out loud, our community is also engaged in what the community should be doing to give it a voice, which is making economic statements and making political statements, i.e. you're participating in local elections especially, and you are changing and adapting your buying habits to further support your own community. So this isn't just that me saying Black Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter, walking through the street and then continuing to do whatever I do and not do nothing else. No, this is also, this is me saying Black Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter. I'm gonna go to the polls and I'm gonna vote in a way that also says Black Lives Matter, and my spending decisions are also gonna say Black Lives Matter. But again, all of those things also are rooted in the process of community development. You got to have people doing the dark work. Somebody's got to be behind the scenes doing the work that is not going to be glamorized or glorified. That's that dark work. That's those people that are collecting data, the people that are having the meetings, not about the latest protest and how they're going to get in front of the next camera, but about what they're going to do for the children. In particular, maybe the children of people who want to go out and protest, but they don't have anywhere to send their kids, and they might not want to take their kids out there right now because tear gas is a hell of a drug. That shit will fuck you up for life. And they might not want to expose their kids to that, but they might want to still be out there doing what they got to do. There are various different things out there and various different motivations and various different ways that you can be involved and be supportive without, you know, necessarily being on the front lines. And so we need people doing all of those things. Even the social media aspect is right. Also critical about keeping people engaged on social media in such a way that you're pushing them to get active in their real life community, but not in such a way that they become addicted to pontificating and philosophizing and all of these other things on Facebook and they don't do anything else. There's a skill involved in giving somebody information, just enough information that they want to go and get more on their own, but not so much that they become addicted to you and your opinion and the medium that y'all are transmitting information through. I'm done. I'm sorry.
Hell yeah. You said hell yeah, my brother. You should have had a choir behind you. What? That way you can kind of put some soul into it. But no, I'm with you though, because also in addition to that, connecting different people. All right, so if we all fight out here fighting for the same thing, I'm a community organizer, community activist, whatever you want to call it. I work in the communities. We do work in the communities as much as possible. We in the communities as much as possible throughout the weeks, throughout the days, throughout the month, throughout the year. So I'm working in this community, been working in these communities for years. Things have happened in these communities with police violence that didn't necessarily spark a protest. But working in these communities, something happens nationally and locally, protests are sparked. Protests are mostly sparked by national protest, not what happened nationally then locally, but nevertheless, protests are sparked. So now there are protests in these communities for these communities, but the protesters haven't necessarily or at all connected with the community that they're protesting for. So with that being said, with that disconnect from the protesters to the community that they're protesting for, because they've not connected to them, after the protests die down, will there be anything else that's done, or are we just going to just talk about it? Because nevertheless, the police violence will continue. Now, protests can help bring about change. They bring attention. They bring agitation, bring awareness. Attention and awareness, same thing. I don't know why I said it, but damn it, I said it. It sounded good. But they instead of agitate and open his eyes. So, in my opinion, we cannot allow the protest to be disconnected from the community that the people are protesting. Because that means both sides are bullshit. And if we're being straight honest, because we got to be straight shooters, right? So if we're being straight honest, from the community organizing side to the protesting side, if we see what's going on, we know what we're doing, they know what they're doing. If we don't reach out, or even if we reach out and people don't reach back and connections aren't made, that's a shame on, like, whoever. That's a shame. Like, it should happen, though. The connection should be happening. That's my thoughts with doing the protest, connecting the protesters to the community, the protest organizers to the community organizers and the people that you're fighting for. You have to connect. It can't just be photo ops. It can't just be something that looks good because you want to show this to somebody 30, 40 years from now. Look, I was at the protest, and yada yada. Hey, that don't keep black people alive. So to me, doing the protest, connecting with people, organizing, putting together long-term plans. I'm not saying long-term plans have to be in place at this point, but starting to put in place long-term plans to continue the energy, to continue the action, to continue the fight on a different scale. Because now, because the protests will die out. We know this. But the fight don't have to die out. And we have to keep the fight going because our lives are still going to be in danger if the fight don't continue to go. Because like we said, we want to believe that real change is happening. But real change is not going to happen if we continue to do the same thing we've done previous years and just allow and just stay disconnected. The community organizers stay disconnected from the protesters. After the protest die, nothing else happens, no connections made, and everybody go back to normal. And we still are vulnerable. To me, that's one of the most important things is connecting, and gathering resources. Like building, like really, really, really building, especially if you don't have nothing in place. If before the protest, the community isn't organized, during the protest, the community got to start the organizational foundation right there. Because if not, we're going to be, we kidding ourselves.
Yeah, I think one of the things we definitely got to do with regards to organizing and networking is we got to understand where we get on and where we get off the train. So this police brutality thing that everybody's protesting right now, we understand that the train was started with the death of a black man. But we also have to understand that at this point, it's bigger than black people. Like, people are now talking about police brutality, period. Not just police brutality in the black communities. And while they're saying a lot of the things we want them to say with regards to Black Lives Matter, we have to understand that at some point, the change that will come from a national outcry of police brutality might not necessarily be one that's specific enough to create real change, positive change for black people.
Right. Right.
And so in that, we got to understand when to get off the train. When does a protest that was started with the death of a black person, when do we lose control of the narrative? When is the narrative co-opted? And when do we go back to just doing the community work, you know, with the plan that we've implemented or the plan that we're creating and wait for, and I'm not saying just wait for something else to happen, but, you know, we have a plan in place, but wait for anything else to happen during which we will execute the community response phase of our community development plan all over again. You know, and that's the part I think that's going to frustrate a lot of people is they feel, especially the people I'm talking about, they feel and they sense that the movement that's happening now is no longer about equality and justice.
Yeah,
for black people, and now it's just about police brutality in general.
Because across the board.
And because we know that
we got bias,
they fucking up everybody. We know that
we know that. This was specifically about black people.
Right.
But you're right. Narrative control is definitely important. Because you're right. The narrative, that's why, you know, that's like I was saying earlier, from Black Lives Matter to police brutality to violence against minorities, all these different things. Because we're seeing the police brutalize everybody who's at the protest. But the focus of the protest is about Black Lives Matter, which means were protesting the unjust police killings of black people.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, yeah, I do agree. Narrative control is definitely something that has to be done during the protest, in addition to everything else that we stated. All right. So after the protest died down, what now? What should be happening?
I think what happens after the protest dies down is an assessment. Every change in energy has to be met at the end, sealed off at the end with an assessment. What was accomplished? What opportunities were presented that weren't taken advantage of? What failures were there? And in that, you know, you got it. So again, we say you never stop community building. So you should still be community building this entire time. So at this point, the only thing that needs to be done new is an analysis of what just happened. How long did we control the narrative? Why did we lose control of the narrative? Did we lose control of the narrative? Were there any new people brought in? Were there any new faces that showed up? Any new resources that have been presented? Were any opportunities to get more resources presented? Any partnerships that we feel like, temporary partnerships that we feel like can be solidified? Any alliances that can be made? Any new means of doing something? So that's where you go into just a full analysis of, you know, was our response adequate? What are the likelihood? What's the likelihood of this happening again? And if that's been decreased, was it a direct result of what we did, or was it a result of something else that happened coincidentally at the same time as us protesting? If it did not increase or decrease, and we feel like things have largely stayed the same, then you go into, well, what did we miss? What did we not do right? Where was the disconnect? Like, I feel like if you don't ever stop community building, which we never should, then the only thing that's left to do after a protest is a thorough and objective analysis of what you did, and a real look, an objective and truthful look at the outcomes you created, and then you adjust your community response plan. Okay, so this didn't work the way we thought it would, so let's change that. And this worked better than we thought it did, so let's move this. Maybe we move this up in the priority list, you know, or maybe we find some kind of way where we can incorporate this into a more daily activity. You know what I'm saying? Like you analyze what happened, and then you change your plans. You make adjustments to your tactics, your strategies for when things happen, and blah, 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 and you keep it moving.
Yeah, I do agree that an analysis has to happen. And now, I like your angle of the analysis, because it's based off of plans. Now, the thing is, if we're going to analyze these protests that are happening right now, because that's what I'm thinking. We're going to analyze these protests right now. Ain't no plans and strategies in place.
It don't look like it.
Nah, they I know they're not here. I know they're not. Trust me.
I don't think they are here. I don't think they are here either.
I have personally contacted protest organizers. So.
Yeah.
I still think, even though these current protests are not as organized as what you laid out, an analysis still has to take place about the who, what, where, when, why, and how. So,
absolutely.
Did this shit work or not? What were the outcomes of this? Did we just feel good about this? Was a real change? The real change happens. Like, here in Tallahassee so far, a police advisory council has been created. The name of the officer has been released who killed Tony McDade. Those are two things that have happened so far. And then it's been a whole bunch of community meetings. But tangible things. I don't know how effective the officer. I don't know what all that's going to bring about, knowing the name of the officer. I don't know how effective that police advisory committee will be. I don't know how much power they will have. I don't know. But I do know, if I'm just talking about outcomes, so far from protests, I know that has happened. But if I'm being real, the protests are not, as far as I know, as far as I can see, and as far as I've assessed, and for talking to people in the communities, the protesters are not connected to the community, as far as I know. You do have community activists who are connected to the community, who are connected to protesters, but that person themselves don't live in that community, and you know, they don't necessarily represent that specific community. So there's still not that real connection with the people that are in that specific community where the police violence happened. So with that being said, if I'm just thinking about after the protest, what we do, and we're thinking about it from a sense of plans not being in place, it's put motherfucking plans in place. But also, going back, like protesters and community organizers, once again, have to connect, but putting plans in place to keep the community safe, putting communication plans in place. How can we take control of these narratives? How can we create the narratives for ourselves? How can we better protect ourselves? How can we hold the police more accountable? Those different things, to me, have to be in place. How can we continue to develop this community? Those are things that have to be in place after the protest. Because the thing is, we don't want to be here again anytime soon. We don't want to be here again next year, because these killings have been a yearly thing, especially the ones that really, really cause national outcry, happen at least once or twice a year. Black people are killed by police all the time. So, that's what I think about when I think about the question, what do we do after the protest? It's, if we're not already organized and already don't have plans in place, and damn it, that's the first step, to be organized and get plans in place so we can not be here again. Mm-hmm. You hear it, man? So,
I can dig it.
Yeah. I do got one question. How do you think we can better control the narrative to bring light to all the victims of all the black victims of police violence, regardless of name, gender, or stature?
You know, the difficulty in that is well, to answer your question directly, we need a database of all of the black people that are killed. That includes name, gender, and status. And until we have that database, we're never going to be able to adequately shed light equally on all of the people that are put in harm's way. And the trouble with that is that data is held by police departments, and in order to get police, and some police departments aren't collecting the data, in which case the data just doesn't exist. So in order to get that data, people are going to have to get politically involved in demanding that laws, policies, or ordinances are created that forces mandates police departments collect that data and share that data. That can be done on a local level or on a national level, but it needs to be done. We could try to arrange, Black Panther type police review or overview teams that follow police around. You can do that as long as you don't interfere with their activity, and they could keep their own tally. However we choose to do it, we need to get that data. We need those statistics in order to adequately make sure that everybody is getting spotlight. Absent of that, The only other way I see of doing it is to not recognize the specifics of any situation and treat everybody as if they are just a black person that was murdered. We don't even get into the status. We don't get into the gender. We don't get into, you know, all of those other things. A black person was murdered. And in my opinion, that should be enough. But I understand the need to create an emotional connection, so you need for a lot of people to have the names and the specifics out there so that people can say, that could have been me. I get it. But as long as you're doing that, without enough data to be able to point at everybody that it happens to, you're going to create division in the movement where people feel like they're underrepresented. And in this situation, even if we were to go hard in the paint, and I do think there should be an equal level of outrage regardless of who's killed, but the facts of the matter is we know about more black men being killed than anybody else.
Right.
So there's always going to be that kickback of, well, what about the black women that are killed? Or that kickback, and I think even to that, focusing on a specific occurrence might be a problem as well. Because like we were talking about earlier, black men might be more likely to get killed by police, but black women are more likely to be raped by police. You know, are more likely to have other sorts of civil rights abuses happen to them where they still get to go home at night, but they're traumatized. Yeah. They're fucked up.
Well, see, this is a thing where we can't get into trying to rank who trauma is worse.
Right.
Whose experiences, because that's that dumb shit that we don't need to get into. That's unproductive. And so I asked this question to, you know, kind of spark conversation and kind of get you to go into what you're talking about now. But I do believe black news and black social media can be used to bring light to the different people. Now, I do agree with what you said. If we talk of specific killings by the police, the number of men they outnumber or should outnumber the women, because they fear more the men than the women. But I do also agree that women are more likely to be sexually assaulted than anybody else because they see the women as weak. So, but we're all victims of police violence in some way.
Right.
We're all killed by the police in some way. So we can't get into, oh, well, my death is greater than your death. Bitch, we all dead. But,
right.
But I do believe that we can use black media and black social media to bring light to as many people who are affected by police brutality as possible. I do believe that can happen. And if you're going to be a person, and look, I'm going to say this shit to some of y'all. All right. Look. If you have a fucking social media account, right, and you come across a story of a black person who has been a victim of police violence or any type of other violence, and you think that story needs more attention, goddamn it, use your platform to bring more attention. Don't complain about the attention not being brought. Use your fucking platform. Stop complaining.
Right.
Say,
right.
Hey, this happened. Please share. Don't say, oh, man, I wish we could bring more attention. No, you actually could. You don't have to wish. You actually could. So now you're more of a part of the problem that you have a problem with. And that sounds crazy, to have a problem with the problem that you have a problem with. So.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things we try to do here on the Freedom Train Network. That's one of the things that we try to do, you know, in PAX. Is one of the things, like, if you, we take the phrase, be the change you want to see to heart. And I think everyone needs to take it to heart. If you want to see more equality in the way that black news is disseminated amongst the black communities, then be more equal, especially if you are a news creator or a content creator. Be more equal in the content that you create and in the news that you disseminate. And also, as media or as people that consume the media, being it, all of the other black people out there who aren't directly producing media, be more equitable in the media that you consume. You know, so don't only consume the story about George Floyd, but ignore the story about Breonna Taylor.
Right.
You know, don't only consume the story about, you know, this black, this cisgendered black man, but ignore the story about this transgendered or transsexual black woman or black man. Like, read all of it. Consume all of it. And that way you get to the point where you're starting to remove the bias that a lot of people who are just hunting for content, for ratings or views, they might have, where they might say, well, I'm not going to cover this black woman who was brutalized because nobody's going to look at that. But I am going to cover this black man who was killed because everybody's going to talk about that. You know, so everybody has their role to play in this whole system of exclusion. You know, nobody's exempt from it, and nobody can say it's not my fault. It's all of our faults that this system exists. And even if you're only, even if you're the person that's only consuming, what you're consuming and how you're consuming and the rate that you're consuming is also still, unless you're making a conscious effort to do something different, it's still contributing to the exclusionary nature of a lot of these protests and outbursts and situations.
Yeah. Yeah, it's we can do a lot more than what we believe we can do for ourselves as far as being a voice. Because we're at a time where, hell, you really can't, people can't censor you. What you can't say on one phone, you can say on another. Like, you can't be naked on Facebook and Instagram, but they got whole flicks on Twitter. That's a very Joseph thing to say, ain't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is. That is. That's. I just had an out-of-body moment. Like, damn, that's a real Joseph thing to say. I would say some shit like that. I would find a way to sneak sex into this house.
Hey.
But, yeah. But, nah, but for real, like, there are various platforms you can use to get your information out. Yeah, build email list. That'll be one great thing to do during these times. And the people that you're connecting with, build email list. If they shut you down on social media, they can't shut your email list down. So build text chains, different things. Find different ways to connect offline. I just want us to not be here next year, 2 years from now, 3 years from now. I want us to, like, do a true assessment of where we are, what gains and losses we got from these protests, and how we can positively move forward and not be here again. And I think if we really do that, then we got something that we can work with, and we're really going to change this damn country, because this country need fucking changing. This country like that shitty ass diaper that been on that baby all day. And that shit, like, sagging to the flow like that. And you wonder, like, how the fuck did that diaper stretch that goddamn long? So, got to change that diaper. You got to change America. So, you know. And the parting shots, Pat.
Power to the people.
Any announcements?
I got one announcement. Today is my 7th year marriage anniversary. So, sappy and uncharacteristically human today, because I don't really have emotions. But, you know,
what y'all gonna do?
If anyone ever listens to this episode, even if I ain't say nothing to you, I remember. And
you're gonna tell her you love him?
And all that other sappy stuff.
He loves you. Oh, yes, he do.
Tens of thousands of people, so I don't want to hear no shit.
He loves you. And he said when he get home, he going to put on that Al Green CD.
Yeah, right.
And you know what time it is.
Yeah, right.
Like Trey Songz. You probably like that Trey Songz. You look like a Trey Songz listener. Something like that.
Trey Songz got some bangers, though. I bet the neighbors
Trey Songz do. Trey Songz do. Hey, Usher do too now. Usher got some songs like
that you can get off to.
Like,
but I like that. I bet the neighbors know my name, and you gonna think I invented sex. I rock to those.
Hey, but you know who? You know who? If you trying to make a baby, you know who you need to listen to? That people, some of y'all jits and some of y'all folk be sleeping on. If you really trying to make a baby, Silk, the group Silk, the group Silk, R&B group Silk. There's a meeting in my bedroom.
Yeah.
Lose control. Yeah. Hey man, look, ladies. I'm telling you, I got a mix. I got an R&B mix. If I put this mix on, you might as well go ahead and rearrange the next 9 months of your life. I'm telling you. So. Hey, really good guy. Hey man, man, let's move forward. Let's connect. Let's really build positively. Let's really do what we need to do. Let's not pump fake. Let's not be out here for the social media fame. Let's not try to be just taking pictures and videos. Just say we was at the march. Just say we was part of this. Let's be real agents of change. And if we not, then you wild. So with that being said, Two Fangs in the L like a player. We up out of here. Why am I laughing like that? I don't know. I just, it felt this, so I kept it back.